Welcome back, everybody. We continue all the way till 6 o'clock tonight right here on the Big Talker 1700. Always a good day when we have Zuba Mahente from ESPN be our guest. He comes to us on the Draft House 50 Hotline Mills Civic Parkway in West Des Moines. Zubin, how are you, man?
Good, man. Huge week of college football. I mean, we were just discussing the notion of what a big game that was for Penn State, and then you kind of say to yourselves, a week later, another big game. If they get through that one, suddenly Michigan State looks like the old Michigan State. Pretty amazing to see what's going on in the Big Ten, as well as most of college football. But we were discussing this the other day. If you had told a Penn State fifth-year senior in 2013 when they got to campus playing for Bill O'Brien after everything that had happened, kid, in 5 years you could leave as a national champion, who could have thunk that was possible?
Well, I got you on that one. You're absolutely right about that. All right, we'll come to the Big Ten in just a moment because we now know that game day is headed to Ohio State for Ohio State and Penn State. A lot of people in Ames were hoping that they might show up there for the first time ever, Zubin, now that it is a matchup between TCU and Iowa State, and both teams are ranked in the top 25, and the game is for first place in the Big 12.
Oh, I would say two things to that, Jim. One, I think Iowa State's story is unbelievable. But I think at the end of the season, if you go back and list the top five games that would end up determining who got in the college football playoff, regular season games, because obviously conference championship games will play a huge role. And now that everybody has one, it's sort of uniform. But if you go back and say, let's take a look at the top five games that determined who is in, or more importantly, I guess, who is being left out of the college football playoff, I can't say this for sure, but I feel really good about saying Ohio State and Penn State would fall into the list of games, especially because there's a lot of people believe that Penn State may not be able to take a loss, and obviously Ohio State would be two losses. So I understand where Iowa State fans are coming from, but I just think when you look at it from a national perspective, a lot of people don't even really know Iowa State is having this sort of year. It's obviously huge for you guys. I used to work there. I'm loving seeing it. I had a chance to talk to Matt Campbell. It's great. It's a resurgent program with an incredibly loyal fan base. But from a nationwide perspective, I think people are still warming to TCU, right? If they're still warming to TCU, it's going to be really difficult to pin them on Iowa State. But I just think that game is so, so big in the Big Ten in terms of implication. As for Iowa State, I actually have a unique perspective on this, Jim, because when they were 5-2 last and basically having their best season here since, 2002, when they rose to 9th in the polls, I remember, I was there. That was the period I was covering the team. I still remember a distinct story. Dan McCarney was the coach at the time. I'm sure most of your listeners are aware, outside of your newer listeners. They had just gotten to 9th in the poll, and then they sort of took a little bit of a pounding. They went to, like, Texas and Oklahoma back-to-back, and just reality sort of set in. But at a certain point, they were 9th in the country, and McCarney used to have a press conference every Monday or Tuesday morning, late morning, and he's the only coach that I ever covered that would come to these in a full suit. He would always come in a full suit, and charge into the Jacobson building, if that's what it's still called. And we'd go up to the second floor. And he came in at, like, he would always be on time. Like, Jim, like 11 o'clock on the dot, he would walk in. And there was one day it was like 11:05, 11:06, 11:07, 11:08. And everybody's like, I don't know where he is. So somebody went to go fetch him. And he came in and he said, oh, sorry, guys, I was a little bit late. I was taking a call from Kirk Herbstreit. And it was one of those things where it was such a badge of honor for him. Now, that didn't make it on TV or whatever. He just sort of said that to the media. But it was just such a great feeling for him to say, I got this program to the point where College Game Day is paying attention, to where a top analyst is paying attention. And you might think that's nothing for Urban Meyer and any of these other coaches that get, you know, calls from people every week. But for Iowa State to be in that sort of position back then just went to show you how much it means. Remember, McCarney's an Iowa guy, and his dad was the police chief in Iowa City, but it just goes to show you, for a guy that's from the state, what it meant to get Iowa State to that point. If I recall, Trent, you probably know better than Jim and I'm trying to remember. Like I said, I think they got whooped at Texas, got whooped at Oklahoma, and the year didn't exactly end perfectly. If I'm not mistaken, that was Seneca Wallace's senior year. They may have lost, like, UConn in their home finale. It was kind of a disaster, but to see them in the top 10 was an incredible achievement. And that one innocuous moment, Trent, from Dan McCarney, just walking to that one innocuous moment, just shows you what it's all about at a place like that.
Yeah, it was Oklahoma first up. They get ranked in the top 10. And then Zubin, they promptly get beat 49-3 in that football game.
Yep.
And yeah, it was certainly a difficult one, and the way that ended up, but one of the bright moments of Iowa State football, and maybe the biggest game since that season. It's the first time the two top 25 teams will be playing at Jack Trice. Was back in 2012 the last time, and we'll see that on Saturday with TCU. Well, with that, you mentioned Kirk Herbstreit, and riled a few Cyclone fans up with some Twitter comments, basically saying, well, in fact, saying, quote, he's gone two different times about Matt Campbell leaving. That's not what Cyclone fans want to hear. And, you know, it leads to the question, who's calling Matt Campbell?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things there. And I'd actually have to speak to Kirk to see exactly what he's referencing. But obviously, Kirk has some really strong ties in the state of Ohio. That's where Matt obviously came from. So there must be something there. A lot of people talk to Kirk, and he's highly regarded. But I would think two things. I don't think he's going anywhere real quick, because I still feel like it's unfinished business. Like, if he were to, I don't know, if he were to have, let's say, a 7 or 8-win season or something even greater, let's say they went to, like, a 9-win season, whatever it is, I still think he would be a hot name, but there's just enough trepidation out there to see, let's see him do it, right? So best example is, like, Boise State. Like, when Boise State is a hot coach, that coach realizes he's in a good spot. Now, it's a little bit different this year for Brian Harsin. They're not playing the type of football we're expecting, but I'm just using this as a point of comparison. When Boise State is a good coach, they're usually there for a handful of years. Now, Chris Peterson elongated it, but Dirk Cutter was there for a while. Dan Hawkins was there for a while. Obviously, Chris was there for a while. My point being is that a lot of times you need to show it's more than 1 year. I don't want to call it a flash in the pan, because it's not a flash in the pan, because that's not the right terminology. But I think a lot of ADs are going to want to see it for more than 1 year. It could be just a soft schedule. Now, it's hard to say that in the Big 12 because you play a round robin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Campbell can go up to say, everybody, look, we didn't duck anybody. We played everybody. It's the Big 12. But I still think for a coach of that age, you're still going to need to prove it, like, maybe just twice. You know, maybe just twice. It might just take 2 good years to get him out of there. But the bottom line is this, guys. If somebody is looking at Iowa State's coach in his second year on the job or his third year on the job, that can only mean good things for Iowa State. That generally means he's doing a great job. Bigger places are calling. And if he were to leave, your candidate pool is going to be larger, because he will have dispelled the notion that it's a coaching graveyard. I can tell you this from firsthand experience. I went to Rutgers University, which in its nadir was far worse than wherever Iowa State has been. And once Greg Schiano proved that you could win there, it suddenly didn't seem like the sort of job it had always been painted to be. So it's a win-win for Iowa State. If he stays, great. If he doesn't, it's probably because he's had a level of success nobody could have imagined, and probably left the program in a far better spot than where he found it.
Zubin Mahente is our guest. He comes to us on the Draft House 50 hotline. All right, Zubin, then quickly take me to Iowa and their scenario now in the Big Ten. After that, again, a lousy display offensively at Northwestern. They put up 10 points against Michigan State, 10 points against Northwestern. You've seen a lot of Iowa football. What has happened to their offense? Where did it go?
It's a great question. I mean, I think throughout Kirk's tenure, it's really never just been the strong suit of the team. Obviously, the offensive line has been great. But, you know, I'm not taking away anything from Brad Banks' Heisman runner-up season, but he's had a cavalcade of quarterbacks, not too many offensive coordinators. But I just feel like it's sort of like, you can protect the quarterback, but if the quarterback can't do anything, well, what does it really matter? Now, I know, obviously, Iowa's had some great running backs over the years. I thought Liddell Betts was one of the most underrated players I've covered in my entire career working anywhere. I thought they've had some tremendous personnel pieces, but they haven't been able to put it together. The loss to Michigan State, while ugly, doesn't surprise me so much, only because, as I mentioned earlier, the type of team that Michigan State has become. And I'm not really big on hearkening back, but I was anchoring SportsCenter Saturday morning right into the Iowa Northwestern game. And, you know, we showed all the shots of Kirk getting off the bus, and we signed off at noon. And I remember the last thing I said was, I literally said this on the air, I got a bunch of Hawkeye fans that are friends of mine, and they could all tell you that this is one of the strangest trips Iowa takes. I think there's something about playing in Evanston that's been a hex for them over the years. Even in basketball, it's always been, as you know, Trent, kind of a weird place for them to go. Mm-hmm. Football, no exception. And I remember right when we got off the air at noon, I just said, hey, This is going to be a really tough one for Iowa. This has just not been a place they've played well recently over the years. Enjoy your college football Saturday, then the game again. Immediately when we were done, I went to pick up my cell phone. I got a text from Garmin, Andy Garmin, and he basically was like, yeah, I've seen this one before. And I think we just sort of were both on the same page just saying, you know what, if Iowa were to lose this game and lose it ugly, obviously the way they lost it was very disappointing, just the fashion in which it happened. And, but it was just one of those things where I don't know where you are as a program, and I'm not trying to be too incendiary when I say this. I'm not sure where you are as a program when you go to Northwestern and you kind of say to your buddy, like, you know, I think there's a decent chance they lose this game. Mm-hmm. Again, Pat Fitzgerald's done an amazing job, and their facilities are on the up and up. I mean, if you want to see what big-time private school money can do, do a Google search of what Northwestern's facilities are about to look like. They're going to be top of the line. But when you just kind of have that simpatico message with somebody that's sort of like, this is a real tricky game. You know, Wisconsin fans don't walk around, or teams in the Big Ten West, other teams that are trying to win the Big Ten, just never walk around saying, boy, this game to Northwestern, this could be a tricky one. If you're a championship caliber team, which of course they are not this year, but if you're a championship caliber team, you never hear your fans say something like that.
Well, Zubin, speaking of championship caliber, we'll find out the World Series champion at the latest by November 1st. That'll be Game 7 if we get to that point. Dodgers-Astros, still a little bit odd with Houston making the jump over to the American League. I mean, this is a game that we saw for years and years and years, and these teams would play, you know, 15, 16 times a season. Not the case anymore with the jump over there. Baseball fans, you know, are going to be excited, but you got to assume that the casual baseball fan maybe doesn't have the same kind of buzz for this one.
It's, you know, it's so funny you say that, Trent. It just ties right back into your first question that Jim wrote. If the casual fan, now it's hard, right, because there's 120 whatever teams in the FBS and there's 30 teams in Major League Baseball. But if the casual fan, and you guys aren't casual fans, you're avid fans, you do this for a living, your listeners are avid fans, they listen, they, you know, live and die with the Hawks and the Clones and Drake and you and I. But to your point, if the average fan knew how compelling Iowa State was, knew what an amazing story their quarterback is, or what an amazing job Gary Patterson has done at Texas Christian, considering how many other options there are to play big boy football in the Lone Star State, I think people would be like, wow, that's a really compelling game. It's the same thing for baseball. Mm-hmm. If the casual fan knew a little bit more about Jose Altuve, other than the fact that he's short,
right,
or the kind of player that Springer is, or the notion that Marwin Gonzalez could basically play any position on the field that you needed, or that Yuli Gurriel is a superstar, underlined, in Cuba. I was talking to our Marley Rivera. She covers a lot of baseball for ESPN, and she was just like, my goodness, if people knew what a big star Yuli Gurriel was in Cuba, in his home country, people would flip out. This guy's like the eighth best-known player on the Astros. So it's really one of those things where the Dodgers are an easier sell. Lasorda just turned 90. They are the Dodgers. They have great history. They have Clayton Kershaw. But the casual fan is for Houston is much like the casual fan for Texas Christian and Iowa State. If you just knew a little bit more, boy, would it be an amazing story for you to watch. I think they're the easy sentimental favorite after everything that's happened down there with the Hurricane having never won the Fall Classic. They've been a franchise, I believe, for 56 years, maybe longer than that. They've never done it. They have a bunch of guys that are easy to root for. Any cursory search, even for the casual fan, would show how poor they were just 5 years ago and what kind of team that they've become. So I think it's tough, but baseball has sort of gotten to the point where it's not fervently followed in the regular season, so you can't blame people if they're playing catch-up at this point. Again, we do it for a living, and your listeners love it. But for the person that's just tuning in now, it's just like, oh, the Astros. But even the tiniest bit, if you just dug one inch below, you'd be like, oh, the Astros, you know, but unfortunately that's not where we are. It's a football country.
Zubin, we'll let you go on the NFL then. It is a Monday night game this evening, a battle in the NFC East. We have it right here on the Big Talker 1700 as soon as Trent and I are finished for the evening. It is Philadelphia and Washington. And I think a lot of people maybe didn't have those two teams. I think a lot of people had the Cowboys and the Giants listed in those couple of spots, those top spots. Where are you on tonight's game and these two teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think if the Eagles win, it's going to be hard-pressed to say they're not the best team in the NFC. I mean, record-wise, that, you know, they're walking around with one loss. I don't think there's any other teams in the league that can make that particular claim. But I just look at it and say it just goes to show why what Howie Roseman, their GM, did was so interesting. So Howie Roseman was their GM, and he lost a power struggle with Chip Kelly. And he basically was relegated to running the business side of the operation. I'm sure he was making a good living, but if you're a football guy, you don't want to be making decisions on luxury suites and season ticket packages. You want to be drafted guys. But he lost out to Chip Kelly in a power struggle. Chip got fired, and something very rare happened. Howie got the job back. Usually in a situation like that, when you lose a power struggle, you're just out, right? Or it's very, very tough to get back in. He lost the power struggle to Chip and then got essentially his job back. And when he got the job back, people thought he had gone crazy when he had Sam Bradford and Carson Wentz on the team together. Why would you draft Wentz if you know, what's going on there? And then you pick up Bradford like a week before the season starts. Like, what is this about? Why do you have these two guys? Even Chase Daniel, it was like making like a ton of money for a guy that would be like the second or third string guy. It's like, what are you doing here? And it just goes to show sometimes you have to give these guys the benefit of the doubt. That's the reason that they're there and we're talking about them. You know, look what they did. They flipped Bradford. They got an amazing sort of haul for him. They made Wentz their undisputed starter. And anytime you can flip quarterbacks for the currency that they did to send Bradford to Minnesota because they were desperate after Bridgewater, getting a haul in return, basically saying, kid, we're going to put it in your hands, and believing in him. It's amazing. I just think there were so many people. I mean, just fast forward to the day before the 2016 season started, before Wentz went 3-0. I know they finished slow. But people would look at Howie Roseman and be like, what is the deal with this guy? He got two quarterbacks, traded one of them. Now he's going to start a guy that's never started a day in the league. And, guys, just a little over 1 year later, let's call it 1.5 years because we're in week 7, right? 1.5 years later, that has proven to be one of the shrewdest moves in the NFL. Oh, by the way, Daniel's gone too. So it just sometimes goes to show that when things don't make sense on the surface, these guys have a plan, right? The Rams had a plan. A year ago, it's like, what is the Rams' plan? The Rams look great right now because they had a plan, they got the right coach, and they put the right coach in position with the right quarterback. So I love the Eagles because a year ago, a year and a half ago, people are scratching their heads like, what are they doing? And it turned out they knew what they were doing all along.
Good stuff as always, Zubin. Thanks for your time. We will do it again next week, and, well, we will see. Maybe game day will be making their way to Ames if they continue on this ridiculous run that they're on right now. Thanks, Zubin.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That's Zubin Mahente on the Draft House 50 Hotline, Mills Civic Parkway, West Des Moines. Always good stuff out of Zubin, Trent. And I liked his take, really, on Major League Baseball. And how we know the two teams because that's what we do for a living. But he's right. The casual fan, they don't probably have much idea who a lot of those players on the Astros are. They might know a few of the Dodgers, including Kershaw, of course. But, man, oh, man, oh, man, it's like we've always had this discussion. How does baseball promote its stars so that they get, you know, total name recognition? Like, football does, like the NBA does. The NBA is the master at promoting stars, but it's amazing to me, and I thought Zubin just nailed it by saying, yeah, it's going to be very entertaining to watch. It looks like a great matchup, but a lot of people aren't even going to have a clue who some of these players are.
Well, yeah, it's difficult. In baseball, it's a regional sport. I mean, you see the numbers, and it's a regional sport, and that's what it is, and when you get to this point, and you get... You need to have a national storyline, and it was, you know, the Cubs and the Indians last year, and especially, most importantly, it was the Cubs. You don't quite have the same thing here. Yeah, the Dodgers haven't been there in 29 years, and it is the Dodgers, so there's a little bit there. But Houston, they've only been to the World Series one time. It was when they were in the other league when it happened, so
right.
You know, it makes things a little bit different when they lost to the White Sox. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, the numbers are going to be down. Numbers are going to be down when what they were a year ago because of the Cubs being involved. But you know what? People that listen to our show, they're fans of sports. They're going to know the guys. And maybe you'll learn something new. You'll learn a new storyline. That's all well and good. But you got to give a little bit more credit to our listenership too, Jimmy B. You know, the people that listen to our show, they know sports. Mm-hmm. And they know baseball.
They do.
They're going to be excited about this matchup. The numbers will be down, though. I don't think it'll be a big storyline for me because I'm going to be watching, right? And the people listening, for the most part, they're going to be watching. That's who we're talking to, Jimmy B. Don't worry about those people that are going to miss out on what I think could be a pretty good series.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very highly entertaining series. I really think that. I mean, look at the pitchers that are going to open up. You got the double K's with Keuchel and Kershaw. I mean, this has got some real juice to it from the standpoint that you and I and how much we love playoff sports in general, but it's the World Series, so that's why we're going to be really dialed in for this particular series.
Well, Jim, we're due for a break, and you're done for the day, Jimmy B. You're another easy out for you. I'm going to talk with Wolfgang on the other side, and Wolfgang's a little bit down. I talked with him earlier today. He's struggling with the Hawkeyes loss. We'll talk Hawkeyes with him. We'll talk some Cyclones. All coming up on the other side. Wolfgang joins us as we'll take you up until 6 o'clock. Jimmy B and TC here on 1700 KBGG. Welcome back. It's Jimmy B and TC here on 1700 KBGG with you until 6 o'clock tonight. And we welcome in on the Draft House 50 hotline our man Wolfgang. You can find him on Twitter at Wolfgang Hawkeye, and he joins us here today. Wolfgang, what has happened to my man? A disappointing loss for the Hawks against Northwestern over the weekend.
Whoa. I thought we were talking wrestling, man.
Oh, you want to jump into the wrestling train, huh?
Who knows? Maybe down the line. We talked before we came on, Trent, and I told you, we literally talked for like 10 seconds. Just, what are you feeling? What do you have an opinion on? Because you don't ask me something I don't have an opinion on. Who cares, you know? It's just talking and blabbing about nothing you don't give a damn about. But I don't know if I'm going to be happy, sad, mad, looking to the future. This is going to be interesting to see how both you and I kind of, weigh the waters here. I am in a loss for words.
So you get through the non-conference. I was 3-0. Wyoming, North Texas, hard to learn a whole lot about. But you got to be excited with the win against Iowa State. We see how much better Iowa State is than I think anybody anticipated at this point in time. But you get through that. You lose the tough one to Penn State, lose to Michigan State, but it still felt like there was a lot in front of this squad. They come back off the bye, beat Northwestern, Minnesota, set up at 6-2 before that final stretch, and now with the loss to the Wildcats, a lot of the excitement, it's gone.
And Trent, I said that last week. I was getting mad because you're hearing people, Northwestern sucks. Northwestern sucks. You know, this is going to be an easy game. I don't understand why newspaper guys or radio guys or TV guys do that. I don't know if they're trying to hype it up so that when Iowa loses, it's a meltdown, which also makes good radio, good TV, good ratings. I don't know what they're doing. Both you and I knew this was not going to be an easy game. This is Northwestern. They talked about it. Did you hear the people? We were driving to Clear Lake, so I got to listen to Gary and Dolph, which is enjoyable. I haven't got to do that all year. I normally like to do that and listen kind of to both, but I hadn't got to do that much. So that was kind of fun to listen to. I love Eddie Podolak. Gary Dolphin's come on a number of times, so I enjoy listening to that. But I will say, Gary Dolphin, if it's not a first down, do not tell me it's a first down, because I'm excited and cheering in my car, and then I find out a half a second later, Eddie Podolak says, "Nah, Gary, I don't think that's a first down." I can't stand that, and I know every radio and TV guy does that. If you do not know if it's a first down or a touchdown, don't tell me. Is that fair? Do you listen to enough radio to even have that opinion? Obviously, when you're watching TV, you see, and you can make your own opinion. But, man, does that drive me crazy. And I know Zobel did it. My God, my small G, growing up in the backyard, raking leaves when the games weren't on TV. He did that, but he did it with passion, heart, love. He loved his freaking Hawkeyes, and I love Gary Dolphin, too. But that's got to stop. He has to know that annoys fans to no end.
Yeah. I haven't listened to him call a game just on its own outside of basketball in a long time. So football-wise, I'll have to take your word for it. Haven't heard him call a game. But, yeah, you got to make sure it's a first down before you call it a first down. Yeah, you get tripped up from time to time, spot, whatever it is. Those kind of things happen. But I got you.
Which foot do they come in with? It drives me crazy. These refs coming in over here. Okay, so there's where the bots, they're running. Sometimes they go with their left foot. Sometimes they go with their right foot. So I'm going to back up Gary Dolphin here. who knows what foot these refs go with. It's embarrassing in the year 2017. This is how we're marking first downs and balls and stuff like that. There has to be a more, 2017. We can put a man on the moon, but we can't figure out how to, judge a first down better. You tell me, refs, which foot are you going by when you come in from either direction? Because maybe that's what Dolph's looking at. Oh, he's going to go with that left foot. Oh, wait, he's going to go with that right foot. And sometimes they switch it up. They do a Michael Jackson, breakdance moonwalk. Which is it? Because it's kind of important. You know what I mean? You just got the first down, or it's fourth and one from your, from the 40 or whatever. It's an important thing. It really is, Trent.
It is, but I don't know. You, Brett Ridge on the Hawkeye Huddle, you guys worry about the refs way too much. Iowa didn't play well enough. Iowa did not play well enough, and that leads to the offensive play calling of your boy, Brian Ferentz. Battering ram, Akram Wadley, 185 pounds of him, time in and time out. We said last week, Wolfgang, this was not a team where you're suddenly going to be able to figure out how to run the football. They slow down Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin. They slow down Saquon Barkley. This was not the game where you're just going to be able to pound it and figure out that offensive running game. And we saw what happened. And this was my concern. Not that Brian Ferentz doesn't have a whole lot of great qualities, because he does. But it still comes back to, he knew the Iowa system. He knows what his father wants as an offensive coordinator. That's why I wanted to see somebody new. That's why I wanted to see somebody different in that role. Somebody that could bring 21st century ideas into it instead of what Iowa continues to do. Zone blocking scheme. Here we are. Try to beat us. That's all they are. I wanted to see new, innovative things. They changed the passing game. They went back to what O'Keefe did. That's all well and good. But I wanted to see something different. And that's why I was never a big fan of this. You couple that with the fact, Wolfgang, that if this goes wrong and it continues to go wrong, who do the coaches turn to? What if Keaton Copeland, the new wide receivers coach, he comes over and says, what we're doing is not working. I think if we do some things like this, well, do you go to the offensive coordinator? Do you go to the head coach? No, because they're one and the same. It's the same family. You're not going to go to the head coach and rip the offensive coordinator because it's his son. And that's the problem, and that's the nepotism angle. It's not getting the job. I could give two craps about that, but it's the other guys in that room, the difficult spot that they're put in, and that's why I was not in favor of this.
You know what? And I kind of poo-pooed that a little bit. I get you, because I had it that I believe in Brian Ferentz. I believe in his background. I believe in him being under O'Keefe and under Ferentz and under Belichick and under all those guys. I believe in him, and I still do believe in him, because if you look at the first year, stuff is always hard. It's always hard getting your feet under you. And I'm still in no way ready to give up on him at all, not even 1%. But yeah, am I a little disappointed so far? Yeah. How could you not be, Trent? 10 points against Northwestern in overtime. That's unacceptable. And I just start thinking back to, and I don't know, Let me take that back. Some people you always have problems with your offensive and defensive coordinator. We all think we could do it better.
Mm-hmm.
Norm Parker was a freaking stud. And every once in a while you hear, certain things they didn't like about Norm Parker, but the guy was a stud. Year in, year out, you look at the stats, and the thing that means most to me is not yards, it's points. And he was always a stud. Norm Parker was always a freaking stud. And now I'm looking at Phil Parker. He's a pretty darn good defensive coordinator, played without Josie Jewell, not just the MVP of the Iowa defense, the MVP of the team. He's that good. He's that much of a stud. He's that much of a leader. We played without him. But at some point, I'm sitting here looking at Norm Parker, rest in peace. I'm looking at Phil Parker, and I'm thinking, dude, I feel sorry for these guys. The pressure that they are on to stop the other team every time, because we just do not put up points. We are allergic to points for whatever reason. I don't get it. I don't understand why we can't do it. You look at Texas Tech, for crying out loud. They were, number four in the nation in scoring this year before the Iowa State game? How about bringing in a Norm Parker or somebody that knows defense? Then you got something. I don't understand why Iowa can't get their offense going and score more points. Putting up 10 against Northwestern is pathetic. I was not along the lines of saying this was going to be a gimme game and Northwestern sucks. The media loves to do that. I don't know why. It's just, I have no idea. To put pressure on Iowa, that way if they lose, oh, then they get tons of phone calls or they get tons of reaction on Sound Off or Trent Connan or with, you know, with anybody. Miller and you. I don't understand why you guys do that. I think you and I knew this was not going to be an easy game. I can't remember who you picked. I believe you were worried about it, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I was. I thought this was a game that Iowa didn't match up very well, and it played out even worse than I anticipated. 10 points against that team with the issues that they had in the defensive backfield, but they just kept battering their head against the wall. This is going to work. This is Iowa football. This is the way we do things. It's enough. It really is, and that's why I was hoping.
There was so little there. Mm-hmm. There was so little there for Wadley, Mr. 1900. You know, there was just little there, and I understand getting your running game going and getting the guys in sequence and get it going. I understand that. But at some point, and we have, please, can Iowa find a way to get Akram Wadley in space? I don't care how you do it. If you want, I'll start reading up on it. Different ways to get Akram Wadley the ball. This is not just a stud for Iowa. This is not just a guy that makes people miss and takes it to the house and makes people look stupid for Iowa or even Iowa's history or even Big Ten history. This guy is a stud in the open field when he has space. This isn't a Hawkeye fan talking. Anybody that has watched this guy knows he is elite in open space, Trent.
I was a proponent of bringing in a guy like Brent Vigen from Wyoming, who has been a long-time assistant coach with Craig Bold, was with him at North Dakota State, and they did things that could work at Iowa. It would be a change in the system. It would be change in what Kirk would be comfortable with, but it still is something that could work with the talent. And that's the other part. You're not going to be able to run Texas Tech's offense at Iowa. You're just not. Not an effective level. You're not going to be able to do a lot of the things that Ohio State does. But what you can do, and where I was most their most effective, was running the football out of three wide receivers, running the football out of shotgun spread. That's where they've been their most effective this year, but they continue to pound the ball up the middle, between the tackles, and it doesn't work. It hasn't worked. You have a new offensive line. You have two new tackles. Find something that works, but they were happy. All right, we're going to be in a low-scoring slugfest, and let's see if we can pull one out. That's what the game plan was after you saw the way that game was going. And again, Iowa was on the short end of it. It doesn't make, you can still be a good defensive team. You can still run a pro-style offense, but you can do it with some new ideas. And the new ideas just don't appear to be there.
And see, and I love coming on here because I'm always a little bit scared when I go on Hawkeye Nation podcast, what I could say, what I can't. You know, I mean, those are obviously, I'm not going to say they're homer websites because they're not. John is very good at what he says, and Rob Howe comes on, and they are not homers, but obviously we err on the side, and I will say I err on the side of that, but I'm always worried if I can just go off. I'm not going to call people stupid or idiots or call for jobs. That's not what I do. I don't do that. I believe in Brian Ferentz. It's his first year. Let's give him some time, and I bet you he will get it done. And if you, like we said, we talked a couple weeks ago, you look at that schedule next year, and then you bring back the offensive linemen that we're going to have, the two tackles and the center. And again, are we being too hard, Trent? We have lost two guys on the offensive line that we were expecting to be studs. So let's put ourselves right now in Brian Ferentz's shoes with the running game. What does Iowa do? They like to run the ball. That's what they like to do. At some point, it's not working, and I think you have to do something else. What, you know, again, not an expert. Don't pretend to be. Don't pretend to know one-billionth of 1% of what Kirk Ferentz knows, Brian Ferentz knows, and Ken O'Keefe. But sometimes, it's just like you said, it looks like they're running into a brick freaking wall. Now, had they had the two offensive linemen that are out, you know, okay, here we go. We might have something here. And as bad as it looks right now, Trent, and I've brought this up before, I don't like the word luck. If you want to use word luck, that's fine. Sometimes you need the bounce of the ball to go to your way, whatever. Whatever semantics anybody out there wants to use. Iowa has to get a little bit lucky bounce of the ball, guys stay healthy. Two offensive linemen gone, boom. What does Iowa like to do? Run the ball. That hurts. That hurts big time. And Stanley had a couple throws, and I was at Clear Lake, so we were driving, like I told you, and then we put the Wi-Fi on and the Apple TV up there up at Clear Lake, so I got to literally, the first play I watched, listen to this, Trent, the first play I got to see was the drop by Fant to lose the game.
Mm.
Not fun at all. That hurt. I know that guy is hurting. I like him. But what I will say about Stanley, I still think O'Keefe is the quarterback coach. Am mm-hmm. I wrong?
No, you're right.
This is what needs to be said to him over and over and over again. If they need to put a fat head on his dorm room that says touch, 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 okay? Put a little air under the ball. He did it a couple times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think we went to that, from what I understand, and I didn't see the coach's tape, but we called a couple of them where he did look downfield, but it just flat out wasn't there, which is fine. You don't throw it then. But you have to open that stuff up, even if sometimes when it's not going to be complete. Because if they're putting that many guys in the box, and we have to run, we have to run. Well, if you're running up against that stuff and so many guys in the box, you got to try something else to loosen it up. And, yeah, I'm pissed, I'm happy, I'm sad. I don't know what I am, depressed. Trent, I'm all of the above.
Well, here's some good news for you. Basketball begins Friday night. William Jewell comes to town. 7 o'clock, get your tickets now for an exhibition game over at Carver Hawkeye.
Billy Jewell,
if he's making his way over. Followed a week later, or 6 days later, with Belmont Abbey.
Abbey. Yeah,
absolutely. The regular season begins with this troika of beautiful games. Chicago State, Alabama State, and Grambling State before they make their way down to the Cayman Islands. Get your tickets now. Oh, well, at least the basketball team has a chance to be good, but we got time to get into that later on. So with all this happening with the Iowa Hawkeyes, Wolfgang, the Iowa State Cyclones check in at the latest AP rankings at number 25. They're 5-2. They have road wins against Oklahoma, against Texas Tech. They have won 3 consecutive road games for the first time since the 1960s. Not only is a storm brewing, it's already brewed. There is a storm happening up in Ames.
Yeah, and a storm is brewing in the stomachs of Iowa fans sitting on the toilet right now, man.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, they look, this is a completely stupid statement to make. I'm just going to say it. They look like a football team, man. They actually look like a football team. They look like they can tackle. They look strong. They look like their quarterback is Joe Cool. He has touch. Their receivers are just bleeping sick. How many of those receivers can he just go to at any given point? I don't know that their run blocking right now is, you'd have to tell me. You probably watched it closer than I did, but their run blocking is stubborn, but they are giving him time to pass, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, if you look at what Iowa State's got going on right now, and we brought it up a couple weeks ago after we were putting so much pressure on that Texas game. Boy, if they don't win that Texas game, then they beat Oklahoma. Now we're sitting here saying, there's not a team they can't beat.
Right.
There is not a team they can't beat if you're looking at that now. And it's not just Iowa folks. It's not just Iowa State fans. It's just not media in the state right now. They are getting national pub. There are national guys talking about them on TV, talking about them on Twitter. And I didn't see this. I had somebody tell me, is Kirk Herbstreit trolling Cyclone fans? That's unlike him.
Right.
Have you seen some of his tweets? He's basically like, enjoy him while he has, because he's gone, baby.
Yeah.
Something like that. Am I going too far there?
No. Herbstreit is getting a little, I don't know, just a little more of an edge to him here lately. You know, he had the thing with Washington and telling that Chris Peterson should be happy that the ESPN even broadcasts their games and going after him there. Now he's doing this to Iowa State fans. I don't know. Maybe it's an edict from ESPN. Be more like Stephen A. Smith and less like yourself. If that's the case, well, Game Day will be another show that I'll be crossing off the list of things that I'm going to watch. But it's, to me, Wolfgang, he has to know something, right? You don't just do this. You don't just say somebody in that vein oh, he's gone. You know, he's out of there. It's over.
He basically said that. Just so people know, are we exaggerating maybe 5%? But we're not really exaggerating, right? With
no.
What Kirk Herbstreit tweeted. Check it out, people. We're not really going too far here.
Not at all. Not at all. I'm trying to find the tweet and see, because it came out, what, last night?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know when
that
came out.
Yep, here it is. Here, all right. So the first one was, Dear 80s, thinking of making a new hire, I'll save you from your coaching search firm fee. Go directly to Ames, Iowa, and get Matty Campbell fast. All right, all well and good, right? He's put an opinion out there. He thinks he's a great coach. Absolutely. So he goes
on. So did you. You bought tons of stock in Matt Campbell.
Oh, yes.
Before it was cool.
Oh, yes.
Before
yes.
It was cool. I'll give you credit. I'll give you credit.
Thank you. So somebody responds, an Iowa State fan, shut up, Kirk. Just and he responds.
Who are we talking about?
No, Kirk Herbstreit.
And
Herbstreit comes back. Sorry, big fella. He's gone. Then goes a little bit further with our friend Andy Garbin from KCCI. Says, I don't make up the rules, Andy, but let me assure you, enjoy this team and this coach in particular while you can. He's gone. So the second time, he doubles down on he's gone. He's got to know something. This is just something that you throw out there. You got to know something. You'd say, "What?" His first tweet, sure, makes sense. Absolutely. You buy it. But for a second time to double down and say, he's gone, does he know that he already has the Tennessee job? What does he know that we don't?
Wow. The Tennessee job. Now, and Andy Garman, for people that don't know, I think you're friends with him. He isn't a guy that tweets you at you angry or
no,
mean or anything
no.
like that. You know, I mean, he's very respectful. He mm-hmm. he doesn't do, I'm guessing anything he tweeted was not out of bounds. Wasn't that his name of the show?
Right.
But, you know, I just wonder if, oh, the Tennessee job, I'm going to do some homework. You got me pumped up about that now. But he doesn't really have, like we talk about, does he have a base there that he can do it? Obviously, Tennessee is a good job. Their fans expect a lot, Trent. There are certain programs that they expect a lot. Is that a good job? Is Nebraska a good job for Matt Campbell? Or do you stay at Iowa State, keep building, because it's looking good. He looks like he knows how to recruit. He plays some of these guys young. But if that happened, Trent, if Matt Campbell, if you look at what Iowa State's been through the last, they lose Chizik. What does Chizik do? He goes and wins a damn national championship and did nothing at Iowa State. Literally, almost nothing.
He also promptly got fired. Gene Chizik didn't win a national championship. Cam Newton won a national championship. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to have the players. It's up to the coaches to coach him.
Well,
what do you mean?
I mean, it's also up to the bag man to get Cam Newton what he needs to get there, but that's a different conversation.
You look at Kale Sanderson. Couldn't do it at Iowa State. Couldn't beat Brandt. Couldn't do anything. How many straight did he win? Three? Three at Penn State, national championships. Then you go to Hoiberg, Mr. Golden Boy, that we all love, including Hawkeye fans. And I think my mom has a crush on him and still does, no matter what fight went on at the Bulls practice. She still loves the guy. Now you got Matt Campbell maybe going to leave, a guy that all the national media are now tweeting about, the guys that know college football are watching the highlights, at least watching some of the game. If they go from losing Chizik, national championship, Kale, three championships at Penn State or whatever it was, when he couldn't do it at Iowa State, Hoiberg with what he did at Iowa State, and then Matt Campbell, the guy you were buying stock in, and he kept saying this guy's going to be a stud. I mean, does he leave after this year for Tennessee? Does he leave for Nebraska? Why would you want to go to Nebraska? You're never going to be able to do what they did back when they were on steroids.
Yeah, I don't see him leaving for that. No, I don't see him leaving for the Nebraska.
So what's the job out there that might be open? Seriously,
I told you. Tennessee.
Okay, and a lot of people will say, where's the base? Where's his base there? So does he just ditch all his offense, all his assistant coaches that have gotten him where they are right now when they have no base in Tennessee?
Yeah, no base in Iowa. He had no base in Iowa, and there was no.
Yeah, you're talking Midwest a little bit, though, right? I
well,
mean,
but look at what Kentucky does. What does Kentucky do to bring in, you know, some decent recruiting classes? They go into Ohio, and they pluck people from there. They are the northernmost SEC school outside of Missouri, which is a different part of the country, but they go that route, and that's how they can build. Tennessee, it is more difficult to recruit than I think a lot of people envision. Georgia, their renaissance has hurt them. Of course, what we've seen at Alabama has hurt them. You don't have the same kind of natural recruiting base there. But you're going to the right division. You're going to the SEC East. You're going to the right spot if you're going to make a
good
jump.
Good call. Good call.
And he brought his whole staff with him from Toledo to Iowa State. A lot of people question doing that. Then you bring most of your same staff there. It can work. It's football coaches. You know, the whole recruiting thing. Do you really need to have a guy that has some kind of connection? You build connections. You build that way. I think it's overblown. If Tennessee wants him and he wants a job, you sign it up and it's going to happen. But we sound like a couple of Hawkeye fanboys because we're both nervous about what he's building there.
Well, but we also like it. Do we want Iowa State? I'll speak for myself. Do I want Iowa State to be better than Iowa? No. I'm a Hawkeye fan. But I do want them to win. And what he's done there, it'll be interesting. I don't know that I agree with you on the Tennessee front. But that is a good school with good tradition, with good money, with good fan base. But they are hardcore out there, man. They are hardcore. Iowa State fans, you know, they want to win. They really do. But they're not crazy, boo the team on the field and all that stuff that Tennessee does. So it will be a different kind of pressure. He seems like he can handle it well. He's still young. But if you've got all these guys, all these national dudes pumping him up, and he's going to get how many more millions of dollars?
Lots. Tennessee, you know, probably a 5-year, $30 million contract, I'd guess, something in that range.
And I'm not being arrogant. Okay, Iowa State has no chance to win the national championship. Tennessee would.
Yes.
Nebraska would.
I wouldn't say Nebraska can win a national championship.
They'd have a chance. We can't say that. No. 70s. 80s and 90s,
right.
And I understand what you're saying. We can't just poo-poo that.
Nope,
maybe they
nope.
get it figured out again.
Their history is great. I'm not talking about history. I'm talking about the here and now. And the here and now, Nebraska not only has to run through 11-1 in the regular season, they got to beat whoever comes out of the East, then they got to win two games in the playoffs. I don't see Nebraska being able to do that. I don't.
And teams come out of the, you know, Oregon. I mean, there's plenty of teams that come out of nowhere that can do it. If you've got the right coach, if you've got the right building program, and it can happen. Do I think it will happen in Nebraska? Do I think he should leave for Nebraska? Absolutely not. I'm not even sure Tennessee. So I'm going to look into some of the other schools that maybe would have an opportunity to just totally bust out like that, that he would be able to come in there. This is his second year. We knew he was going to make an upgrade. All the guys I was talking to inside the Iowa State program said this. They are going to a bowl game, and they will win 7 games. They all said that. And I went, okay, we'll see. And even earlier in the year, I was poo-pooing them. Yeah, look who was wrong, me.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wolfgang, we are out of time. We will do it again on Friday. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the baseball starting tomorrow night. I know you're suddenly a baseball fan.
I am, and I'm more of a baseball now with what's going on with the Hawkeyes.
Yes. I'm right there with you. Right there with you. We'll talk to you on Friday. Be good.
See you, Trent. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Wolfgang Hawkeye with us on the Draft House 50 Hotline. And with that, we're done. Out of here. Enjoy the Monday Night Football tonight here on 1700 Westwood One coverage. Coming up here in just a little bit, we'll be back with you tomorrow here on 1700, starting at noon, the Ken Miller Show with myself, Trent Condon, and then 4 until 6 o'clock with Jimmy B and TC. Real sports talk for real sports fans. 1700. Have a good night, everybody.